The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. This is Sam Livingston, and I'll be your host today. We'll go ahead and jump right into the topic. I'd like to go all the way back to the year 2000. This is right after the election debacle, the presidency for the presidency of the United States. And I'd like to quote from an article that Mr. Gerald Fleury wrote at the time. This is from the Trumpet Magazine, December 2000. And you could take the news peg out of this article and replace it with something from today, maybe impeachment or the Mueller investigation, and you could pretty much publish this article again. The content of it is incredible, and it shows the amount of foresight that Mr. Fleury has and that God inspires him to have to see where these trends are leading. This article is titled The Real Election Crisis. Again, it's from December 2000. Mr. Fleury writes, "When America's forefathers established the Constitution, they told us it would work only if we were a law-abiding people. The Constitution was created only for lawful citizens. Our own forefathers prophesied that our democracy would fail if we didn't heed their warning." Later on in the article, he says, "We have been so poisoned by our corrupt political process that we don't even see the danger of such reasoning. Too many of our people exalt leaders who maneuver around the law instead of those who passionately keep it. This is another sign of our rotting morality." He's referring there to the lawyers and the judges down in Florida who were trying to pretty much rig that election in favor of Al Gore. Now, this next chunk of this article, I think, just has some incredible power quotes. Mr. Fleury says, "The Florida vote scandal will poison our political system more than any scandal of the past 8 years. It's worse than anything that happened in the previous 8 years from that to that point." So that would be all of the Clinton scandals. Mr. Fleury says, "It eclipses all of those scandals. The corrosive process is so deeply entrenched, it will continue from one election to the next. It is tearing our political system apart." I'd encourage you to read this article. He's talking about the corrupt lawyers. He's talking about the judges and these individuals that just cast the Constitution aside so that they could get their man into office. But think about what Mr. Fleury is writing in that time. He says, "This scandal, the Florida vote scandal, will poison our political system more than any scandal of the past 8 years, and it will continue from one election to the next." He goes on, "Biased and partisan lawyers and judges are trying to decide who wins the presidency. It is building a warring spirit between the two parties. No democratic nation can be led in the midst of such bitter division. We don't have a constitutional crisis just because the election is presenting new challenges. We have a crisis because some leaders don't love the Constitution more than themselves." Does anybody really believe these men love the Constitution of this great land more than their man becoming president? Here is the heart of this crisis. I believe that they can't even relate to what I'm writing. They have been practicing this evil for too long. Putting self above the Constitution has become a way of life. Here is the real constitutional crisis. He wrote that 20 years ago. I believe that they can't even relate to what I'm writing. They have been practicing this evil for too long. Putting self above the Constitution has become a way of life. And that's exactly what we have seen the last 3 years from those holdovers in the Obama administration, from the deep state. Again, that paragraph is something I'd really like to refer back to throughout this program. Does anybody really believe these men love the Constitution of this great land more than their man becoming president? Talking about those lawyers, talking about those career politicians, all of those employees entrenched in the bureaus. They want their man to become president, and they're willing to sacrifice the Constitution to make it happen. Mr. Fleury goes on, even if the courts stop the lawyer blitz, too many politicians and members of the press have given dignity to a destructive attack on our law and the Constitution. These institutions are going to be less respected and even hated by many people. Again, how much more is that true 20 years after this article was written? The media, they're all in on it. They won't call out the lies. That anti-constitution, that anti-law bias that permeates those institutions. Now, what an article that is. Again, thinking 20 years later, nowhere else will you read anything that strong or that accurate, especially not something 20 years ago. Many people are recognizing that rottenness today, but you don't have commentary like this, and you don't have it coming from 20 years ago, the foresight to recognize where these trends were leading. Again, I would just like to read that quote so that it resonates in your mind. Again, from Mr. Gerald Fleury's article, I believe that they can't even relate to what I'm writing. They have been practicing this evil for too long. Putting self above the Constitution has become a way of life. Here is the real constitutional crisis. It's not about law. It's not about truth. It's not about evidence. It's their will, and they won't let anything break that. They've been doing this for too long. And this was in the year 2000. Now we have 20 more years built on top of it. I think 2000, that was maybe Robert Mueller was the FBI director at that time or just after that. And he was in power then. And then we have, you could say, his protege, James Comey, coming in after that. They don't even recognize the problem that they have. They don't even see what they're doing. It's just permeating the way that they behave and the way that they live. Now, for the rest of this program, I'd like to talk about the FISA corruption and how it relates to this quote. Obviously, Mr. Fleury has covered this topic extensively over the last 2 weeks. But I thought, again, another point to make is, after this scathing report came out, the Horowitz report that was published on December 9th, everyone said all of a sudden, oh, we've got to reform the FISA process. The judges were upset. Even Comey expressed a small amount of remorse, but we'll get to that a little later. And they're implementing 40 more new regulations and procedures. Everyone's upset. The FISA judges are upset. Even some members in the media are recognizing this problem. Virtually everyone except Adam Schiff sees that something needs to change. But are rules and regulations going to stop the problem? As we'll see today, there were plenty of rules and regulations that were in place during this whole debacle that, had they been followed, would have ended this thing right from the genesis, right from the start. The problem is not the lack of rules and regulations. The problem is not the procedure, though that does have its faults, and we'll cover that a little later as well. The problem is the people. The problem is the ones that are supposed to be upholding the law. It's a republic if you can keep it. We set the laws, we've set the Constitution here, but it's up to you. It's your responsibility to follow those rules. The Horowitz Report, it's so terrible, it's so condemning, but just going through it, it also raises many more questions, and those questions will hopefully be answered by William Barr's John Durham's investigation that hopefully will come out in the spring. But one thing that we have to keep looking back at is, what did the Obama White House know? How far up did this go? And you'll see Horowitz very shrewdly try to avoid this topic, provides a lot of cover for Obama's close circle, Loretta Lynch and Sally Yates. They don't have a lot of detail. There wasn't a lot of work done to investigate them. None of them come to hearings, despite Sally Yates, her name being on one of the FISA warrants. So they're secure. They're at the top. But going back through this report, again, stresses how much they would have known in that time leading up to the inauguration of President Trump. I'd like to begin this segment going back to that January 5th meeting, January 5th, 2017, that happened in the Oval Office. It was President Obama at the time, Vice President Joe Biden, John Brennan, Director of the CIA, James Comey, Director of the FBI, James Clapper, he was the Director of National Intelligence, and they're in there to brief President Obama on essentially the Steele dossier. And then after that, everyone leaves the room except Mr. Obama and Susan Rice, his advisor. I think there are a couple of others of his advisors, but Brennan's gone, Clapper's gone, it's just James Comey and Sally Yates. And we know about this little follow-on meeting because of this strange email that Susan Rice wrote to herself on January 20th. So just before she's about to leave the White House, she writes this email to herself documenting the substance of this follow-on meeting that took place on January 5th. So this is that email, and this is been heavily redacted, but I think it was Senator Chuck Grassley who uncovered this, and he published it, and he emailed, and he asked, can you explain this? And there's nothing. Susan Rice isn't forced to come and testify. So this is this email, this curious email that Susan Rice writes to herself documenting that follow-on meeting on January 5th. On January 5th, following a briefing by IC leadership on Russian hacking during the 2016 presidential election, President Obama had a brief follow-on conversation with FBI Director Jim Comey and Deputy Attorney General Sally Yates in the Oval Office. Vice President Biden and I, Susan Rice, were also present. President Obama began the conversation by stressing his continued commitment to ensuring that every aspect of this issue is handled by the intelligence and law enforcement communities by the book. The president stressed that he is not asking about initiating or instructing anything from a law enforcement perspective. He reiterated that our law enforcement team needs to proceed as it normally would by the book. From a national security perspective, however, President Obama said he wants to be sure that, as we engage with the incoming team, we are mindful to ascertain if there is any reason that we cannot share information fully as it relates to Russia. The president asked Comey to inform him if anything changes in the next few weeks that should affect how we share classified information with the incoming team. Comey said he would. That's the email. Why is there no follow-up to this? Why can't we get answers? Why is there no investigation? Why was it necessary to write this email stressing that the president told James Comey and Sally Yates, the two biggest names on the FISA applications, signing off on them, make sure you do it by the books. Make sure you do it by the book. That phrase came up two or three times in this mysterious email. Make sure it's done by the book. Well, why would we expect anything else from the FBI? For 3 years, we were told they're impeccable. They can do no wrong. Why would we expect it not to be done by the books? And again, as we know now, that FISA application, that investigation, was everything except by the book. And again, why did that follow-on meeting need to happen without Brennan, Clapper, without Mike Rogers? They were there. CIA, head of the CIA, head of the NSA, well, they go out with the administration. Loretta Lynch, she's the attorney general. She's done January 20th. But Jim Comey, he's just 3 or 4 years into a 10-year term. Sally Yates, she fills right in for Loretta Lynch as soon as they leave on January 20th. So this is a message to the holdovers. This is a message to the people who will be in charge, however brief, after the Obama administration leaves. Now, again, we can speculate all we want, but this is a strange email that there has been no follow-up to. But again, by the book. And now we know how much corruption there was involved in that entire FISA process, that entire application to receive a warrant to spy on an American citizen that was in the Trump campaign. And despite all of this, despite how condemning that report is, the director of the FBI and the deputy director at the time, Andrew McCabe, still say this.
As a director sitting on top of an organization of 38,000 people, you can't run an investigation that's seven layers below you. You have to leave it to the career professionals to do.
The biggest mistake, I think, is the process that was in place essentially left so much responsibility on the lowest level of FBI agents and supervisors involved in the process that once those mistakes are baked in, they become very, very hard for the many, many layers of oversight to uncover.
So it wasn't their fault. Jim Comey and Andrew McCabe, they're just at the top. So the excuse now, well, for the past 3 years, it was this process is perfect. It's impossible to game this system. They kept saying that. They kept saying it's so rigorous. It's not possible to get something through that isn't above par or that isn't without probable cause. You can't sneak something through the FISA court. Well, this report demonstrates how you do that if you want to lie and mislead a FISA judge. But so we heard for 3 years, you can't game this system. And now it's, well, you can't hold me accountable because there's no possible way I could know all of the facts. So I have to rely on my subordinates. And they gave me wrong information. This was their huge admission. Well, I put too much stock in the process. I put too much stock in the FISA process. Maybe I shouldn't have done that. But as we'll see in this segment, Comey and McCabe were not disconnected from the FISA application. They were not disconnected from this salacious internet rumor. They were integral to it being used. They knew a ton of details about this bogus dossier, but it was stunning when I first saw those clips, and Mr. Fleury played them earlier this week, how they keep lying. They keep trying to distance themselves from this. No humility, no remorse. They can't possibly say, yeah, I was wrong. I just want to go through this IG report, some of these highlights here regarding how intimately involved Comey and McCabe were after those lines, after those comments. William Barr, he just flat out said what Comey said is a lie. He was not seven layers removed from this. The whole point was that they brought it to FBI headquarters so that he could oversee it, so that they could oversee it. Page 412 of the IG report. One investigative tool for the department and the FBI policy expressly require advance approval by a senior department official is the seeking of a court order under the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. Expressly require advance approval by a senior department official. Someone at the top has to sign off on FISA warrants. You cannot get away from that. And that Comey would say, well, I just have to rely on my subordinates, again, shows that this whole process is a little messed up. It is just a rubber stamp from the top. But again, the point here is Comey took the unusual step of getting very involved in this one and knew a lot of the details about that dossier and how it was used. Page 412, members of the Crossfire Hurricane investigative team should have anticipated and told us they in fact did anticipate that these FISA applications would be subjected to especially close scrutiny. Nevertheless, we found that members of the Crossfire Hurricane team failed to meet the basic obligation to ensure that the Carter Page FISA applications were scrupulously accurate. Such an interesting segment of this report to dissect. They knew this was hot. They knew this was a big deal. They knew that if this got out, it would be a big deal. We are investigating. We are seeking a FISA warrant, an incredibly invasive warrant to surveil, to spy, not only on an American citizen, but an American citizen that is in the Trump campaign, a political party. They knew this would come under a lot of scrutiny, yet they failed to meet even the basic obligation to ensure that the applications were scrupulously accurate. What happened? Why? They knew this was going to come. Well, they're operating in a world before they got that first FISA warrant, before the election, I think it was October 20th, they got that first warrant to spy on Carter Page, two or three weeks before the election. This was the era of time when Hillary Clinton was supposed to win. That's the way everyone was operating. And all this was the insurance policy. We had to get it set in place. And if Hillary wins, which we're all expecting her to do, all of this disappears. It doesn't matter that we got a warrant to spy on Carter Page. We don't need to renew it because Hillary Clinton won. It doesn't matter. All of this goes away. But then, November 8th, 2016, 3 weeks after the FBI gets the warrant to spy on Carter Page, the unexpected happens and President Trump wins the election. And now the whole shift is, okay, this is no longer the, or we're going to have to make a claim on our insurance policy. This thing that we set up, we have to use it now, which means we either use it to take down Donald Trump by whatever means possible, prove that he obstructed this investigation. And if we can't do that, we have to just keep covering it up. So get the renewals, find what we can, prove that he is illegitimate. And then, well, we'll get the Mueller investigation, and then that will give us another 2 years to be removed from all of this nonsense. It took us 3 years to finally find out what was happening. And they knew all along. Devin Nunes was out there warning about this. The alarm bells were ringing January 10th when the Steele dossier was released, January 10th, 2017, when everyone knew Christopher Steele's name, when it was leaked that Carter Page was being spied on, they continued to get renewals to spy on him. We'll cover that a little later. He knew he was being spied on. So how valuable is that? How valuable is it to continue going after someone who knows you're looking at them? Again, we'll cover that a little later. I want to continue talking about how much Comey and McCabe knew. Horowitz writes, "In our view, this was a failure of not only the operational team, but also of the managers and supervisors, including senior officials in the chain of command." Page 103. "We asked Peter Strzok, who made the decision to use Steele as a source in the Crossfire Hurricane investigation. He said that McCabe and Comey were briefed on Steele's reporting and okayed the Crossfire Hurricane team's approach to use Steele in the investigation." Page 139. This highlights, I think, something that doesn't get a lot of attention but is incredibly condemning. When you're applying for these FISA warrants, the FBI agents have to give them to what are essentially FBI lawyers. And those lawyers are the ones that are responsible for making sure, okay, this is legal, this checks out, you can actually do this. They don't review all of the evidence. They're just concerned about the legal approach. So this man named Stuart Evans, later on he proves that he's not as trustworthy as you'd think, but he's raising the alarm about this Steele dossier. He says, this is obviously political research. It's probably funded by the Clinton campaign, and he's raising the alarm about it. He has a lot of concerns about it. So there are about, I think it's 20 or 30 pages of the FBI having this back and forth complaining about, well, Stuart Evans says this doesn't meet standards. This isn't up to par. Well, we need to fix this so that Stu is happy. We need to do this to make Stu happy. And Evans is just trying to get this to a point where, okay, we can actually present this before a judge without being laughed at because it's already been denied twice. And those concerns about Steele that we learned about in the report, it's laughable how bad it was. But this was not something that Comey and McCabe didn't know about. Page 139, "On October 12, 2016, Evans's concerns about Steele were briefed to Comey and McCabe in a meeting attended by all of these other FBI agents. The notes reflect that the group discussed that Evans was also concerned that the foreign intelligence to be collected through the FISA would not be worth the risk." This is really dangerous. We're really treading in dangerous waters here. Is this really going to be a big payoff to spy on Carter Page? Following the meeting, some other attorneys on October 12th advised them that the concerns Evans had raised were discussed with Comey and McCabe, and that both were supportive of moving forward despite those concerns. So this wasn't just Comey and McCabe hearing it from the low-level guys. Yep, Steele checks out, he's fine. Comey just says, okay, well, I trust you, go ahead with it. People there were running to Comey and McCabe saying, I have an issue with this. Steele doesn't check out. This is just political dirt. Page 140. McCabe said that if the FBI had not sought FISA authority under the circumstances presented here, simply because the team was afraid of the political nature of the information, the FBI would have failed to do its job. Page 149. Sally Yates was told that FBI leadership felt strongly that the FISA was an important investigative step. Now, bear all this in mind. Comey and McCabe are saying, essentially, we just got bad information from the people below us. We're so far removed from it, we can't really be held accountable for that. James Comey went to Trump Tower on January 6th to tell President Trump about this dossier. And Comey says this. Well, I'll just go ahead and read this from the report. This is page 180. This is Comey makes a memo of his meeting with President Trump the day after he has this meeting. The email, or Comey's memo, further states that Comey explained that the material, the Steele dossier, was inflammatory stuff and that a news organization would get killed for reporting straight up from the source reports. This is what Comey told President-elect Donald Trump on January 6th. A news organization would get killed for reporting straight up from the source reports. And then Horowitz says, in testimony before Congress, Comey has described this part of his email as communicating that it, the Steele dossier, was salacious and unverified material that a responsible journalist wouldn't report without corroborating in some way. That's what he told President-elect Donald Trump about the Steele dossier. It's salacious. It's unverified. It's gossip. No honest journalist would report this without corroborating the facts. But the FBI, we're going to go ahead and use this as probable cause to get a FISA warrant to spy on a member of your campaign. They knew everything about that dossier. And he went right into the president-elect's office and lied to him about it. He told the president he wasn't being investigated. He told him, I just want you to be aware of these rumors that are out there. Meanwhile, the FBI is taking those internet rumors and spying on his campaign. That's the probable cause. That's the highest standard that we can expect from Comey's FBI. Again, page 360 says that by name, this went up to Deputy Director Andrew McCabe and then Director James Comey. Page 373, as described in prior chapters, Comey certified the first three applications as the FBI director, and McCabe certified the final renewal application. Their signatures are all over it. Page 373, again, says that McCabe and Comey were briefed on what the team had found out about Steele. Page 378, FBI leadership throughout the investigation, they were briefed throughout the investigation on those findings. Page 379, Horowitz writes, in our view, this was a failure of not only the operational team, but also the managers and superiors, including senior officials in the chain of command. That would be Jim Comey and Andrew McCabe, who still, after this report came out, said this.
As a director sitting on top of an organization of 38,000 people, you can't run an investigation that's seven layers below you. You have to leave it to the career professionals to do.
The biggest mistake, I think, is the process that was in place essentially left so much responsibility on the lowest level of FBI agents and supervisors involved in the process that once those mistakes are baked in, they become very, very hard for the many, many layers of oversight to uncover.
Once those mistakes were baked in, it's impossible for the ones high up to uncover it. Page 414, Horowitz says, we are deeply concerned that so many basic and fundamental errors were made by three separate hand-picked investigative teams on one of the most sensitive FBI investigations after the matter had been briefed to the highest levels within the FBI, even though the information sought through use of FISA authority related so closely to an ongoing presidential campaign, and even though those involved with the investigation knew that their actions were likely to be subjected to close scrutiny. What did you expect would happen? What did they expect would happen? That you could just pull this off and no one would call them out? Well, they expected Hillary Clinton to win. And they were expecting big promotions after that as well for almost pulling this off. There are a few tidbits in that report that I just think are so interesting that Horowitz doesn't go very deep into, including Christopher Steele and how much he was talking with the FBI and how much the FBI revealed to Christopher Steele about other people they were investigating that Steele had nothing to do with. So they were telling Christopher Steele about what they had investigated into George Papadopoulos. That is classified information of an ongoing investigation, and they told Steele about that just to help him maybe to encourage him in his reporting. Hey, we are corroborating this. How do we know Steele didn't just walk over to Fusion GPS and Glenn Simpson? How do we know he didn't walk right over to the Washington Post or Yahoo News or Mother Jones or any of those organizations and say, hey, I got some more tips for you. Sources in the FBI tell me so-and-so is being investigated as well. And a lot of people will say, well, what this President Trump won, what effect did this have on his campaign? Manafort got removed from his position. Page and Papadopoulos got removed from their positions on the campaign. Michael Flynn, that's a whole other story that we don't have time to get into. But it doesn't matter. It's the insurance policy. It's that these you can go back and spy on them now that President Trump is in office. They kept renewing Carter Page's FISA warrant until September of 2017, 9 months into the Trump presidency. So, as we'll get into a little bit here now, there was no reason to keep the FISA warrant on Page going. Like I said earlier, Carter Page had learned about it. They were leaking all the time. Everyone knew about the dossier on January 10th. There were leaks in the New York Times, the Washington Post, suggesting that people are being monitored, and then Carter Page is getting targeted by these what are called confidential human sources, and they are being, I can't remember the term, but essentially the source agrees to record the conversation, and they call that consensual monitoring because the source has consented to recording the conversation. But Carter Page and George Papadopoulos, they have no idea that that's going on. But of course, they know, okay, everyone's upset about Russia. My name keeps appearing in these articles. Someone's being spied on. This guy's coming to talk to me, and that's a little weird. So what's the point? The FBI would know, okay, everyone's on to this, that he's being investigated. He's not going to produce anything. So why keep renewing the warrants three more times? Well, they needed more time to go back. They needed more time to build their case. They needed more time to go back and to find that obstruction so they could bring President Trump down so that none of this could get revealed. Page 102, this is from Bill Priestap. He's a lawyer that worked closely with Peter Strzok. He says, we went to great lengths to try to independently verify the source's credibility, Christopher Steele, and to prove or disprove every single assertion in the dossier. This is Horowitz on page 360. We found that the FBI did not have information corroborating the specific allegations against Carter Page in Steele's reports when it relied upon them in the FISA applications. Brutal. You did not do that. You did not go and corroborate those facts before you used it in the FISA application. You decided to try to do it afterwards, and everything that came up was exculpatory. Page 199. Case Agent 1 told us that the team had not reviewed all of the emails the first FISA application yielded and believed there were additional emails not yet collected. They told us that unless there is no evidence collected with an initial FISA application, the FBI will usually seek a renewal to obtain more information. These are, when you get into more of the bits about what exactly a FISA warrant permits, all of that is redacted, by the way, in every report. You don't actually get to learn about what they do, but you can infer from other points that it has to do with wiretapping, phone surveillance, obviously going through all of your emails, opening physical mail, potentially search warrants, all of your online history. They said they collected so much stuff in that first FISA warrant that they didn't even have time to process it. So they had to quickly apply for the second one. And they applied for that second one just as the Obama administration was leaving office. Some more things here about some of the lawyers start to question, well, what's the point of getting a renewal on Carter Page? Why do we keep getting these renewals? This is happening within the FBI here. It says, page 224, Carter Page was no longer using the facilities the FBI was monitoring. There's no point to keep getting this renewal. He knows he's not even at the places that we're still monitoring. He, at one point, he's not even using the phone that they're monitoring because Page, we don't know, accidentally dropped his phone on the street and a car ran over it. So all of these things that they have on him, nothing is turning up. Everything that's turned up so far proves Page was innocent. And it's even more laughable and frightening, really, when you consider what they used as probable cause and what they were looking for. We'll get to that in just a minute. Page 227. And then you get Rosenstein involved. He told us that he recalled raising a question about whether continued FISA coverage was going to produce useful information, given that the FISA coverage targeting Carter Page had been leaked to the media. What's the point? Why do we keep doing this? He knows. And there is a lot of criticism over, well, President Trump appointed Rosenstein, and he had his deputy attorney general sign off on a lot of these warrants. And when you read this report, you see that there isn't that much oversight in this process. And a lot of them say, well, it is essentially a rubber stamp and we rely on what the FBI tells us. And it would be embarrassing for them to have the attorney general contradict what the FBI has turned up. So we just take them at their word for it. Page 379. For example, after months of effort, the Crossfire Hurricane team had not corroborated any of the specific substantive allegations against Carter Page contained in the election reporting and relied on in the FISA applications, confirming only limited factual details such as Page's dates of travel. They couldn't find anything. All they could confirm with it was, well, thanks to this incredibly invasive FISA warrant that we got to surveil Page, we can confirm that on this date, he did in fact fly to Russia. Think about all of these things and then think about what they were looking for. All of this evidence that says Page is innocent, there's no conspiracy. Papadopoulos, this was a chat that they had at a bar. They actually go and interview Steele's subsource. He says, I don't know what Steele is talking about. Plenty of opportunities for this investigation to end, but it couldn't. It couldn't. They had to keep doing this or they'd be exposed right at the start. Page 191. This is what they're investigating. Page 191. All four Carter Page FISA applications relied on Report 95 of Steele's dossier to support probable cause. This is the one report of Steele's big compilation, his big book of gossip and rumors that he collected from who knows where. The main one that the FBI said, well, that report gave us probable cause. That report justified getting the FISA warrant. And that report claims that there is an extensive conspiracy between Trump's campaign team and the Kremlin, that there is a well-developed conspiracy of cooperation between them and the Russian leadership. Paul Manafort, who was using foreign policy advisor Carter Page and others as intermediaries. This is what the FBI is looking for. This is number 95, the one that gave them probable cause to spy on Carter Page. They are trying to find evidence of an extensive conspiracy, a well-developed conspiracy. They're trying to find evidence of Paul Manafort using Carter Page as his mule to send information between Russia and the Trump campaign. And you know what they found when they investigated Carter Page, when they surveilled him, when they got hold of his emails? They found out that Paul Manafort never responded to a single one of Carter Page's emails, that the two had never even met. They found that out after the first warrant, and they still applied for three more because they had to prove this. This so-called extensive conspiracy, the well-developed conspiracy that supposedly existed here, and the two front men, Paul Manafort and Carter Page, they can't find one email exchange between the two of them. Everything that turned up was the exact opposite of what this dossier said. And James Comey and Andrew McCabe and all of them kept pushing it. Well, this is a matter of national security. We have to keep going. That we're protecting our democracy. They are protecting themselves. There are a couple points in this report where I laughed, and it's really sad, but it's kind of comical too how bad this is. There was one point where some men in the FBI are pro-Trump, and they said, it's kind of, I won't read any of the quotes, but as soon as Mr. Trump won, they have all these texts exchanged between the two of them saying, boy, they better go and look for jobs. they knew that this corruption was going on, and as soon as Mr. Trump won, there was kind of this celebration that, okay, these people are going to get weeded out. One guy just says, well, I'm going to sit back with my popcorn and watch them all fall, because it was just a matter of time. This was the Hail Mary. It was all or nothing. They knew that it was either get this FISA as the insurance policy, Hillary Clinton wins, nothing gets covered, or if Trump does win, take him down. When they went to interview Steele's subsource, this is a whole disgusting web of that illustrates how disgusting this whole process is. Christopher Steele just has one main subsource, and he used that main guy's network of sources to populate his memos. So the FBI, after securing a warrant to spy on Page, says, we got to go investigate the Steele's main subsource. They find him, and they start asking him about Steele's report, and the subsource says, that was just talk. That was word-of-mouth hearsay. Those were conversations that I just had with friends over beers. It was jest. There was zero corroboration. It could have been multiple layers of hearsay upon hearsay. And when the FBI interviewed him and went back for a second application, probable cause to spy on Carter Page, the only note that they put in that warrant that they presented before the judge, or that application for renewal that they put before the judge, said Steele's subsource was truthful and cooperative. We believed he was telling the truth, and he cooperated with us. Nobody told anyone, any of the judges, no one thought to even ask, what was he truthful about? What parts was he telling the truth about? Well, that Steele's dossier is all bunk, that it's garbage. No, they just said he's truthful and cooperative. So that implies that everything that we've presented here checks out. We went to his source and he's truthful. It's not even a mistake. It's not an error. It's a blatant lie. That subsource, when the FBI interviewed him, said he did not know where some of the information attributed to one of his sources in Report 95, the big one, came from. Doesn't even know. I didn't say that one, and I don't have a source that says that. Well, we'll find out more, hopefully, in the coming months. And it's deadly serious. It's disgusting to think about what was going on and the lives that were ruined, the hundreds of warrants that were sought to go after anyone in President Trump's orbit. 500 warrants, thanks to the Mueller report. And we know that investigation, it shouldn't have ever gotten that far. This should have been dead day one. And all of that was there to just keep covering it up. Keep covering up how they abused that process, how they misled and lied directly to the face of President-elect Donald Trump, how they spied on an American citizen using an internet rumor. And again, this is a huge report, but it's also a very narrow report. He has one paragraph in there where he talks about the CIA briefing the president on some of the findings that it had gotten from a source. And lo and behold, a lot of the wording of those findings lines up with Steele's reports. And there are so many different avenues that Steele used. We hear about the dossier, but the dossier is really this collection of dozens of memos that he made. And he didn't just hand that whole collection to the FBI. He gave them two or three. And then he gave two or three to the State Department. And then he gave two or three to John McCain. And then all of these lies start trickling in and finding their way to that one central column, the FBI, who can seek the FISA. And they keep saying, we're getting corroborating evidence. This is coming from over here. So-and-so is saying this. And it's all from the same man. The Clinton campaign produced it. The media peddled it. And then the Obama administration used it as evidence to spy on an American citizen and its opposition campaign. And the sad part is people still believe it. President Trump is a Russian agent. Mr. Fleury played the clip yesterday of that reporter asking him, what did Vladimir Putin say to you that inspired you to think Ukraine meddled in the election? They still believe it. They still believe this lie. And it's getting more and more clear with each of these reports how it all emanated from this one place and just kind of burst out into the open, and all of those different sources and those avenues all came back to the FBI, and they just kept peddling and using that same lie. I'd like to end today's show with a quote from Mr. Gerald Fleury's article, Nunes Memo Exposes Unseen Threat to America, April 2018. The radical left has attempted to use the Russia investigation to cripple the Trump presidency. They don't just want to wrest control from Mr. Trump. They are trying to take control of the government forever. They are working hard to smash the last remaining obstacles preventing them from accumulating so much power over the country that no one can do a thing about it. The radical left is lawless. They are satanically sick. These people no longer deal in logic because they have been overwhelmed by the devil. Hitler said, "What you tell people in the mass in a receptive state of fanatic devotion will remain. Words received under a hypnotic influence are radical and impervious to every reasonable explanation." Does that quote accurately describe the radical left? They worship the will, which means they worship the devil. Out of control emotion has replaced logic. That is the American political scene today. We live in a dangerous time. Satan is cast down, and the Nunes memo is proof of that. Satan and his demons are trampling on America. Powerful, powerful article. Nunes was there exposing it. Adam Schiff He was supposed to provide oversight, and he covered it up. But America, as we know, is being saved temporarily. We're getting a look. God is allowing this to be exposed so that we can get a look at the rot that was there. We wouldn't have seen any of this were it not for that. Look how close the Constitutional Republic was to its end. And now we're getting a clear look at just how bad it was. Well, that's all that I have time for today. Mr. Fleury will be back tomorrow. If you have any comments, you can email us at td@kpcg.fm. Thank you again for joining us, and we'll see you tomorrow.